Welcome to the Tuesday Talk Show, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for joining us today. A couple of announcements here before we get into the actual show today. First of all, we have invited all of the local candidates to appear on KAJO Radio right here between 9:30 and 10:30 for 10-minute segments beginning on April 15th. And all but one have confirmed right now, and that one is out of town. We expect that confirmation shortly. So we expect to have them all here for you. Once again, beginning April 15th, that will go right up till just before the ballots come out for the May election. So that being said, it's a Tuesday talk show once again. We ask that you hold your phone calls until after the top of the hour news. But if you want to jot the phone number down, that's 541-472-1270. And when you hear the sound of the radio coming back to your phone, that means that you're next in queue. And as soon as we complete the thought that we're on, we'll put you on there live and let you air your questions or comments to our guest. Our guest today, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Bernie Woodard, Operations Manager of Elk Island Trading Group, and currently the managing partner of Parker's Place Village as it begins to really take shape there. And have I said all that right, Bernie?
I think you got everything right, Chuck.
Just about everything right. Okay, good, good. Welcome to the microphones of KAJO Radio. First of all, we know that the village has been funded, I think, about $1.5 million by the City Council.
$1,179,000.
Okay, $1.1 million plus change here in order to get basically 150 beds ready by, what is it, June, 6 months down the road? Are we on schedule?
June 1st, and we are on schedule.
We're just really beginning to see some things from the road taking place over there. Tell me, what has the process been from the time they said go until now?
Since the city awarded us the contract, we had to go through a lot of building specifications and site specifications. And so we had to hire an engineer, structural engineer, architect, structural architect, to work with the building codes as they are. And at the same time, the city had to take time to pass a transitional housing modification to allow Connex conversions as transitional housing. And so there was some modifications to that transitional code also. And then so it's taken about three months to get all the engineering in place for that site, which we finally got the site plans approved last Friday, I believe.
All right. So now we're really ready to see some things going on there.
Yes, we've – people the last couple of weeks have seen the site being cleared, a lot of the grass removed, the fence lines that were all overgrown from several probably decades, all that stuff's been removed. So we could kind of open it up for a blank chalkboard to start drawing out what we're going to do on the project. And then they've also seen some modifications to the Mint buildings, some cleanup and repairs, painting on those.
All right, because you're actually in coordination with Mint. Once the place is up and running, will you be running it, or will Mint be running it? What's the plan?
It's a dual purpose. Like we'll have the shelter and the security of the shelter, and then Mint will have the wraparound services. If you were a homeless person walking in off the street, we would be open in our gates. It's low barrier, so you go in on the 210 Redwood Highway gate that we'll have there, and then we'll have — our goal is to get people a bed within an hour, or you know, that's our intention. And then Mint is open — that's 24 hours a day, and then Mint is open Monday through Friday, and I think 9 to 5, maybe a little earlier than that. And then they would, during those times, within 4 hours, they would come in and do an assessment of whoever we put into a bed.
All right. Now, Bernie, let me ask you a question. This might be out of your bailiwick here, but because we've mentioned Mint, and you did allude to the fact that one of those buildings was under some repair, and we know that one of those buildings did need some repair going into it. Are you involved with that right now, and what is the status of those buildings? Do you know?
And I know they're using the first building, the navigation center, mm-hmm. at 218. They've already did the improvements that needed to be done inside, electrical improvements and things like that. And most of the stuff that we're doing is cosmetic on the outside, just painting it, cleaning it up. And then 220 is not – I think they use it for storage, and you know, there's some plans for that ahead. But I want Mint to be able to tell everybody what that would be.
All right.
But we're actually doing some exterior painting and cleaning that area up just so it looks better to the community and to the people coming in there.
Tell me about these Connex containers here that will be moving in soon. I understand they're off-site right now being worked on. Is that right?
Yeah, well, we had one on-site just so people could see what they look like. They're refrigeration units that have are built to carry cold, to keep food cold and products cold. And so they're insulated already, and then they have stainless steel and aluminum on the inside. And so what we're doing is buying up Connex's refrigerated, they call them reefer Connex's, that have the air supply has gone bad. And so the refrigeration system's not working, so we have to remove that. And so we had one on site there, but now we've rented another site on M Street that we're having them delivered to so that we can do all of our site work at 210 without anything in the way. And then on M Street, we're doing the conversions of the Connexes.
Right. Are we breaking new ground here, or has this been done before with these Connex containers here?
I think ours is new ground. Our project is creating sleeping spaces, not apartments, not a motel, nothing like that. It's sleeping compartments where people have a safe place to sleep and a safe bed to sleep in for a period of time.
So how many beds per Connex container?
Every 40 foot Connex, we're dividing it into four units, which is the transitional housing code of Grants Pass now, which they've approved and City Council approved that. So we divide it into four, and then there's two beds in each one. So
right.
Eight people.
So 8 people per container.
Per 40-foot container, yes.
All right. It sounds crowded to me, but at the same time, might be living in a tent over on 7th Street.
Yeah, it's pretty crowded over there, too. But this is going to be where we're talking sleeping units. And we're not talking apartments. We're talking about spaces so people have a safe place to sleep. And then instead of sleeping in the parks, in the commercial spaces. And so they have a safe place so they can get their feet under them to get to the next level they need to go to. Right. And then hopefully we get them transitioned out to another place as quickly as possible through the Mint wraparound services.
So in the Connex container, there are four units, two beds to a unit. And I'm assuming that... what about storage space inside those units? And at the same time, are you cognizant of who you're putting in each unit here? They've got to be comparable, don't they?
Yeah, and we're hoping they do. I've had guys on construction jobs I send out of town that are not comparable in a motel room. So it happens. So that's some things that we hope that Mint can do some, pre-work on. Of the people that want to actually bunk up together, because Mint works all the time with the homeless downtown. And, we believe that they'll be able to set up some people that, hey, these two people will bunk together in one room and these two. And then what we'll probably do is, like, as we go through the first 75 people, then those 75 people will get, if they haven't agreed to bunk with somebody, then they'll probably get their own place. And then we add to them after that, once we get past 75. So that's when we start doubling up. And the storage, to give you a little bit on the storage is going to be, the beds are going to be elevated a little bit, not quite as much as your desk here. But then, so they can sleep on the bed, but then there'll be storage underneath of the bed for them to, like, they can have their tent rolled back up. They can put their tent under there. They can, utilize their sleeping bag probably. But any of their other stuff, they can, as long as it fits under there, they're good to go with that storage.
You say bed. Is it a slab or is it a mattress or what kind of facility?
Well, we're still actually working on that because we're looking at the design of, do we just put individual beds in there? But our plan right now is building like a plywood frame and platform that a mattress would go on, like a foam mattress. And then they put their sleeping bag or whatever on top of that.
All right. Well, looking ahead. Now, you mentioned that these are refrigerated containers that you've taken the refrigeration out, but they are insulated. Insulated, okay, that's a good thing. I'm talking about heating and cooling. I imagine with one of these Connex boxes, even with the insulation during the peak summertime temperatures, when it can get well over 100 degrees here in the valley, or in the wintertime it can get below freezing. Are there any options for creating some sort of conditioning units inside those units?
Yeah, we have a plan for split air at some point along the way here, where they would have split heating and air in all four units, and each 40-foot unit would have its own. And I don't know exactly what time that's going to go in, whether that would be before we open up or after. But when you go inside these units, even at 80 or 90 degrees, it's pretty cool. It's cool in there and it's livable. And so, but we are going to work on taking care of the extreme conditions.
All right. Tell me about bathroom and shower facilities.
The bathroom and shower facilities will be a complete separate building. It'll actually be up behind the Mint building that's at 218 right now. And there'll be six separate showers and then six separate showers, stalls, and then where you walk in a door and you got your own place, and then six separate toilets. Those will come along. We're working on the plans on those now to get those submitted, but when we open up, it's probably going to be porta pots that, like you see now, but a lot more of them in this facility, and then handicap units for people to use. And then over, if we don't have the toilet shower facility before we open, we'll get it done here early in the summertime.
So early in the summertime, and in that facility, I assume there'll be privacy units.
Yeah, we don't want to have, you know, we're not looking to have a congregational shower area. Or toilet area, because that leads to problems a lot. And so we want to make it where you open the door and you go in and you got your bathroom by yourself or toilet by yourself.
All right, and shower too by yourself, I assume.
Yeah, exactly. Shower by yourself.
All right. Well, that's good news. And you say you're on schedule, this, but the bathroom facility might not be ready for the original opening in June.
No, we're trying. But if the option is that we go ahead and put portable toilets in there until we do get them ready. There's a lot of moving parts.
Oh, I would imagine. Right now. Let's see. If I was better at math, I could probably figure this out. But how many Connex units are really going to go in there right now?
We have, I think the total is 21 total. A couple of them are 20 footers because of the grade. There's probably 21 total units going in.
21 total units. That sounds like, sounds like a lot for that area back there. And I'm assuming that they're all going to be flat. They're not going to be stacked on top of each other.
No, we don't have them stacked. We have them, they're all single, but they're double. They're like back to back. And so we have to go through some fire code stuff, to create 1 hour fire rating between the units. And so what we have is like, this is kind of a map of it, but like, on one,
we're going to show that on the radio, folks, here.
Yeah, okay. Can you guys see this? Okay. So building one has six total Connex units. Building two has six total Connex units. Building three has four. And then building four has seven, actually. And that's where the ADA units are. So we have two buildings of just ADA units.
All right. So you're going to move in these Connex units and then put a building on top of them or a roof over them? Or is that what I understand when you say building and these units going inside this building?
No, what we do is they're just Connex clusters.
Okay.
They're just back to back and end to end.
Oh, okay.
And so they have roofing on them that lasts a long time. So, I mean, at times like 5-10 years, we might have to put roofing coating on them, but no, it'll just be the Connexes, and they'll be painted, and then the doors will be I think it's 78 inches in between doors, and then the doors will be painted. The whole thing gets painted like a green color, all of the units, and then the doors will be four different colors. There'll be four bright colors. And then basically every unit, like if we've got 75 total units in the, on the 210 lot, then it'll be, somebody would get like unit one bed A, unit one bed B, and unit two, same thing. And then throughout the whole thing, and that would be kind of their address.
All right. And this is going to be available. Well, we're going to take just a little pause here, get right back. There's more to talk about here. We're talking with Bernie Woodard. He's the operations manager of Elk Island Trading Group and working on Parker's Place, the new homeless village, right here on KAJO Radio.
Independent.
Welcome back. Tuesday Talk Show in progress right now. Bernie Woodard, the operations manager for Parker's Place Village and the Elk Island Trading Group. And once again, welcome to the microphones of KAJ Arita. Do you have all of the Connex units already purchased? Are they here? Are they on their way? Or?
Yeah, most of them are purchased and all of them are they're on their way. We can't bring them all in at one time because we're having to do certain phases.
I mean, space might be a problem.
Yeah, and so that's, our goal is, on M Street, get some of them done. And then, as we get our footings in now over at the Parker's Place Village site, then some of the Connex units may come over and just set right down there where they go permanently. And then we bring the ones that we've been working on, and then we work on them there on site, and those will be the last few that we get. But then the first 12 or so will be finished on M Street.
All right. In terms of man hours, what does it take to put one Connex unit ready to put into Parker's Place?
Well, as far as the conversion of it, total man hours.
Ballpark, we're not grading you here.
Yeah, 200 total man hours probably, because we have to do the demising walls, put doors in, cut the doors out. These units are really heavy duty. They're not like regular Connex units, and they have that insulation in there, and they're stainless steel on the inside. So several of the walls inside will be stainless steel finish. And so it takes a while to cut those out, but maybe 200 hours on a Connex.
Sounds like skilled labor needed to do this too.
A lot of it is.
Yeah, absolutely. I would imagine here. All right. With those units coming in right now and they're being prepared, what is the situation now once you get everything put together there? You're still going to be involved in running the operation?
Yeah, I'm really excited about this project. I'm excited because of what Grants Pass has gone through, and to make something special like this happen is, I think it's going to be spectacular. But yeah, I plan on helping run the place, in conjunction with Mint and with our other companies, Alternative Living Solutions, which is basically Elk Island Trading Group. It's nonprofit arm, as far as managing this. The project.
We've talked about this being a low barrier place for people to come in. You walk in, and you said within an hour you got a bed. Is that the plan?
Yeah, the only reason people would be set not taken in is if they come in and they're really drunk or on drugs or something, and they're belligerent and they're not controllable. But that's kind of the low barrier thing, and then that would have to be dealt with police or some other service for a sobering center. But yeah, then our goal is to get them in a bed within an hour.
Yeah, that really led into my next question. And is there a monitoring situation once they come in? Is it just eyeballing of people, or their situation they have to go through with search or anything?
No, well, not really. We're not at this point. We're not searching anybody. We have a good panel set up right now that we're setting up those rules, that we actually have a community outreach panel that meets once a month. It has three city counselors on it, thankfully. As you might know, Kathleen, Seth, and Rod, Rob are on that panel, and they're really invaluable to that panel. And then we have business owners and other people that are actually putting together some of the rules of what that process will look like. And right. So hopefully in another month or so, we'll know more about that process.
What about security?
Security, we're going to have cameras. There'll be security cameras we're trying to make it where, we have to make it where there's no blind spots, because if people are dealing with drugs,
they'll find the blind spot.
They find that blind spot. Mm-hmm. And so we want to make sure that at least if there's something on there, we have it recorded. And so there'll be cameras, and then there'll be one room that has monitors. And that's another. We have the chief, and then we have Justin, police officer Justin, that's on our panel. And, you know, they're going to determine where we want to have those monitors, which unit we want to put those monitors up in so they can get access quickly as possible.
All right. So I'm assuming the place will be manned 24/7. Is that correct?
It will be.
Okay. All right. That being said, the person doing that manning, and I assume it'll be a single person at night, do they have any authority at all, or do they have any qualifications?
The qualification just has to be that, they have some de-escalation experience. You know, we're not looking for somebody that's all, wants to come out and fight with everybody. We need people that are working with the people that come in through that gate and get them to the bed they need so we can get them to the help they need.
A calming situation.
Yeah, calming. We want people that are involved with that know how to calm people down.
All right. And now you're working pretty closely with Mint. What has that relationship been so far, and what do you expect down the road?
Cassie, which is CEO of Mint, is just incredible to work with, and she works hard and every day. And, I saw that to begin with, and that's why I wanted to, our proposal to the city, I wanted it to be with Mint, not 20 different providers, but just one person one company that could handle all the wraparound services. And Mint has already been doing the warming and cooling center. They've already even been doing some, medical service, off-site, on-site, when people, need some help. Those kind of things have been going on. They provided meals and, then they've gotten people the help they needed. And so Mint was just the perfect partner for what we want to do, what we're doing here. And so it's like, we provide the planning, the building, the safety, bringing people in. And then, I used this term in the newspaper article the other day, passing the baton. The baton only meant that we're not going to give them all the responsibility. These people are still going to live in our shelter, but we're passing the baton to them because they have the medical experience to really deal and help get people to the next level they need to go to. And so that relationship with Mint is continuing to evolve every day. But I see nothing but good things on the way this is going to work out with them.
All right. We're talking with Bernie Woodard, ladies and gentlemen, the operations manager for the Elk Island Trading Group and the new Parker's Place being constructed as we speak. We'll take a deep breath, come back right after news, and stay tuned. More to come right here on the Tuesday Talk Show. Welcome back. Tuesday Talk Show continues, ladies and gentlemen. First of all, a couple of important announcements I wanted to make. We have invited all of the local candidates to appear in a 10-minute segment right here on KAJO Radio beginning on April 15th. All but one have confirmed, and we expect that confirmation to come in soon. That person is out of the area as we speak, but we expect that to be confirmed here shortly. So that's coming up April 15th, and we'll continue right before the ballots come out for the May election. In the meantime, our guest today is Bernie Woodard, the operations manager for Elk Island Trading Group and overseeing the construction of Parker's Place Homeless Village coming into existence as we speak daily. What are people seeing right now as they drive? Can they see inside in anything there?
No, right now they can just see the lot, but the lot's cleared up, and then they see the Parker's Place Village building painted up now. And then, they'll see people coming and going out of the navigation center. As they're able, Mint has, I think, up to 49 people a day can be inside there as they run a navigation center through the day.
Right. They're not running overnight operations there, are they?
No.
That's not a sleeping spot here.
No. Right now it's a 9-to-5 navigation center.
All right. But we've been talking about those big Connex containers that you'll be bringing in. When will we be expecting to see some of those move? Are they moving the daytime, nighttime? What is the plan, or do you have one yet?
No, we have one. It's like we've got to get the foundations, the footings in the foundations down, which we didn't get our approval on the site until last Friday, which, again, no fault of the city. It's just this has been a complicated process, and I don't think any fault of anybody, but we got our
government wheels run slow.
Yeah. And it is, we've made changes to transitional housing code, all those kind of things. So, but we're hoping that by April 15th, like the date you're talking about having, people that are running for election, it's like, that's about the time that we'll start having Connexes at least start being finally finished and start being moving over. April 15th.
This is really quite an operation here, from what I understand, from what I've been learning. And I know what the council has approved. Looks like you're operating on a pretty thin budget in order to get all this done.
It is a thin budget, but it's the money that's there to work with. And you know what? As a construction estimator for decades, you know, on federal construction jobs, it's like the federal government always has just a certain amount of money to work with, but then they have a certain thing that they want to get done. And so you have to figure that out. And so as a person that's the contractor, you just have to, okay, here's the budget amount. Here's what we've got to get to. And it's like, let's make this happen. And that's kind of what we're doing. And so it runs, you know, this runs almost a 20-hour day project for me of, you know, the paperwork part of it and working process and moving all of the different moving parts in the right direction so we can be done by June 1st.
What's been the most difficult so far?
Probably the waiting on the engineering part to get done. It was because I'm just chomping at the bit to do the work. And so that's kind of why we went ahead and moved to the M Street so we – that took a little bit longer time than we wanted on that engineering portion. And so it was like we moved to the M Street, leased a piece of property over there so we could do the renovations and then rent it. But yeah, waiting has been the most difficult part.
Now, once you're finished, you'll have accommodations for 150 people or more?
Oh, it should be over 150, but right now we're going to say 150.
150.
Yeah, because there will be other spots on the back of the Mint building that will be adding some pallet houses and things like that in there. So those will add to it.
Pallet houses. Now, those have been in storage here in the county for a long, long time, waiting for something to happen, probably at that location. Is that correct?
No, they're not at that location, but they're at one of the city properties.
One of the city properties. Yeah, but yeah. They were designed for that location, earmarked for that location, I believe.
Yeah, and I can't speak to that. I know that there are 20-some pallet houses on city property that I went and looked at to see the condition of them, which they're still in good condition in wrappings.
Okay. Now, the pallet house, basically, is that a wood tent?
No, they're more of a wood and pre-finished surface, four walls that you put together, and then a roof, and then they either come with a floor or you can build a deck floor with those. So those come in various ways, but they're usually about 8x8 or 6x8.
But that is after we get to build the Connex boxes there. This is further right on down the road.
We have one on this site that's designed, and that'll kind of show people what it's like, and it also gets us to the 150 number that we needed, 150 beds on the 210 site, because that was one of the requirements, was that all of our beds had to be on the 210 site, even though we're using the 218 Mint site for some other things like showers and stuff.
Now, you've even had to even acquire the land, right? You had to buy the land?
Yeah, see, that's all happened in this time period too. Right. We had an agreement with Bi-Mart, and then so we had to close that deal. So we closed that purchase. I think that was in December that closed. So we had purchasing the land, some surveying of the land, a lot of those things, and then also the changing of the code, the transitional housing code. And so this has taken a real teamwork to get to this point of both city and private industry working together.
Now, you mentioned teamwork, and you've already mentioned that you've got a group that's working with you that includes three city councilors. We talked about that a little bit. The police chief also involved, Chief Warren Hansman. Who all is involved here?
Yeah, and so hopefully I don't forget any names, but we do have the three city councilors that Rob has been a supporter of ours since.
That's Rob Hill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, almost the beginning. Just an incredible person. Then we have Kathleen.
Kathleen Cron.
Okay, and she just, especially the last meeting, she asked some great questions and input. And then we have Seth Benham. And Seth has been incredible too. And as you probably know, he's the one that made the motion and, you know, for us to get the award and actually even how the money would be separated to get it to pay the grant. So But then we have the chief of police, and then we have, I think it's Lieutenant Justin, is it DeGruger? But he's been instrumental in the meetings. Then we have the Buy Mart manager. We have some property owners around the area, Larry Hughes, that's on there. Then we have Dr. Scott Nelson. And then who else do we have? And then myself, of course, I guess be considered the chair of that commission. Then we have a couple people from men or people that have been homeless before or maybe homeless now. So we're getting input from them. I've seen a lot of homeless commissions that are like either run by nonprofits or they're run by the city or they're run by somebody, a private group. I've never seen such a hybrid kind of homeless committee like this is to get the real answers. And right. I think it's good for the whole city that it's put together this way.
It's interesting to see that Bi-Mart and some of the neighbors are all involved in that too. What has been the neighbors' concerns?
I think the neighbors' concerns are always like, are people going to be loitering around my property? Are they going to be walking around and looking for what I have? And those are arguments, that you see happening every place. And so, those are the questions, but we haven't had a lot of them from the neighbors. We may get some on these calls. I don't know, but, but it's been, refreshing. We've got a Facebook page up that has about almost 600, between 600 and 700 people that's following it now in just a couple months or so that we've had it up. We also have an email address for people to, send in any kind of concerns to.
All right. If I want to search Facebook, what do I put in?
The Facebook page is Parker's Place Village.
Okay.
And then maybe you have to put Grants Pass, but then it'll pop up and there'll be 600 some followers on it. So, and it's growing. We'll probably put a link to your show on it. It's like, trying to get more and more people to be aware of what we're doing. And so there's no surprises coming in June, that the people that are out there living homeless, they see the situation and where we're going. And our police chief this past Friday on the committee was able to give us kind of a good debriefing maybe on how it's going to happen, and what the police are seeing, how this is going to unfold as. And that's good input.
All right. I'm still stuck with the neighbors here, so yep. Indulge me here. So tell me about light and light pollution here coming from your area into the neighbors. Is that a concern right now, or how are you going to have the area lighted?
Okay, so light pollution, as far as illumination of the project?
Right. Will it interfere with any of the neighbors?
I don't think so. I would say that I would almost believe that Bi-Mart's area would be lighter and the streets are going to be lighter than anything we do. We don't plan on putting a lot of lights outside and things like that. We do plan on having like one light inside each container area. But we'll always be concerned about the community. And that's why the city council and us have put together this committee to be able to deal with any concerns they have, whether they be things of, that might be good for the group, how we can act as a better village, than we are. And, or if we've, have issues out there, how we can deal with those issues.
All right. And noise pollution, noise, I'm assuming, going to be curtailed.
Yeah, I don't know. Whenever you're living around, because I look at this in two different ways. I look at it as being a developer of trying to figure, homeless solutions. And then also as a landowner in Roseburg of being around unmanaged homeless camps. And the difference is managed and unmanaged. When you get to an unmanaged homeless camp and you've got like there are up there, there's some 24-hour, 7-day feeds looking at some of the camps that are unmanaged. And there's some chaos up there of screaming, hollering, fighting. But we don't anticipate any of that happening, much happening here. Like our camps up in Roseburg, the three camps that we have, we're at like 0.03% compared of complaints compared to the city unmanaged camps. And so I think when people get in and they have rules and they have a roof over their head and they have a bed, you know, they're going to want to keep that. And so they're going to want to abide by whatever rules we have. And that's what our committee is doing right now, is working on the handbook of how people need to act, not only in the facility, but then also around the area of the facility.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're talking with Bernie Woodard here, general manager at the Parker's Place Village, being built as we speak. We'll have more after this. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Tuesday Talk Show in progress right now. We're talking with Bernie Woodard, the general manager of the Parker's Place Village, going into existence as we speak. I didn't mention it earlier, but our phone lines are open. It's 541-472-1270. If you have a quick question for Bernie this morning. Bernie, from what I understand, this Parker's Place Village is going to be kind of unique. Is that accurate? Is there going to be anyone like any place like this before?
No, that's a good question. I don't believe there's any place in Oregon, and because this, what we're doing here is a real hybrid system that will allow the city of Grants Pass to comply with House Bill 3115. And what that means, and the Josephine County court order that was agreed to. And so when House Bill 3115 is complied with, cities either comply with it with a time, place, and manner area for people to camp. And what Grants Pass has done is designate the three different camping areas to comply now. And then places like Roseburg and other places have a time, place, and manner area where they allow people to camp overnight, and they're supposed to leave by 8 o'clock in the morning, but they can still camp in all kinds of places in the city. But this will allow this project, Parker's Place Village, will allow the city to close down their camps, the city owned camps. And so that people have an option of a place to go to that's low barrier. And so this is a unique system that we don't believe anybody in the state of Oregon is doing this. And it could be followed by every city in Oregon in the way the city of Grants Pass has put it together. And kind of how that works is the city of Grants Pass has almost 38 to 40,000 people. They have 600 homeless people, and the court ordered that there would be 25% of those would be a sleeping place, that there would have to be a sleeping place provided for those 25% of those 600. And so that's 150. And so that once those 150 beds was provided, then the city would be able to close down camps and not allow camps on public property, or whether commercial areas or in the parks. And so that's what this project is all about, is creating, it's getting the clean parks clean, keeping them clean, getting the commercial areas clean and keeping them clean of camping, but at the same time providing a place for those people that are displaced to go to get the help they need. And that's why this is such a beautiful project, and they put it together really well.
Could this be the answer to lots of the problems up and down, well, I was going to say the I-5 corridor, but up and down the West Coast where this problem seems to be prolific?
Oh, I do believe so. That's why I think I put so much time and effort into this, is because it is a real solution that can work. We have out in the world today, we have people that a group, and nothing against either one of them, but the ones that say housing first, that you got to get an apartment or a house for somebody and then the government pays for it somehow, you know, that's going way too far on that side, because those people, a lot of them would never start paying for it themselves. And then you have the others that just say, you know, let them camp wherever they want, and then that just destroys all of our public areas. But what we've gone to is to the middle ground and creating a place for people to safely sleep to get to, you know, so they can make the choices they need to get to the next level. So our and the Grants Pass RFP, when I saw it, the lights just went off in my head that this will work to make a difference. And by if a city decides to, anybody along the I-5 corridor or wherever they're having trouble with homeless, if they decide to put some funds into the capital to capital improvements, now they've started to fix the problem. and we start pulling people out of the homeless situation one at a time and get them to better places. So I think it is the answer. I think it's the middle road, and it's the middle road that's the real answer.
All right, so that would be the, first of all, the lodging for 150 people inside SAFE and with a partnership with MET, too. So you've got both sides of it. That's part of the equation that makes it unique.
Exactly. Safe beds first is the what I say. Not safe houses or safe apartments or safe paying for motel rooms, but safe beds.
Safe beds.
Yeah, safe beds first, and then you get them to the help they need, which is where MET comes in.
Maybe putting the cart before the horse here, but have we talked about what happens the date that you say it's open and they close the other camps in the transition? Have we talked with the police department and see how that's going to happen yet? Or
yeah, we did ask that question in our Chief Hensman. We asked him that question in the last commission meeting on committee meeting on Friday. You know, and I sure hope I don't misstate, but what, you know, we're looking at is people will either have a choice. They can either choose to go to some place that provides lodging for them, or they can go to Parker's Place Village, which is the low barrier shelter, or they would possibly go to jail or be ticketed for illegal camping. You know, and then the other choice they have is to choose a town that allows camping, you know, that doesn't have requirements against camping in parks or commercial areas. You know, and that's basically what it really is. When we get down to June 1st, there's going to be some decisions people have to make which way they want to go. And I'm trying, you know, I made a post the other day trying to make people aware that are in the camps. You know, there's some things, choices you're going to have to make.
All right. So is the plan still being made for that? Is this June 1st, Parker's Place opens for safe beds for 150 people, and immediately the other camping areas are closed? Or is there going to be a transition period?
That's something up for the city council.
That's okay.
And, you know, our goal is getting it open, and then the city council and the city administration can make the choice on which way they want to go with the camps.
All right.
But our goal is to try to help those people as whatever happens at that point to get them into a safe bed.
I'm down to about my last 2 or 3 minutes here. Is there something that people need to know about Parker's Place and your work here that we haven't covered today?
I think the biggest thing is, you know I keep going back to it, but you know, and there's, I know there's a lot of arguments politically with things, but I believe that, you know, there was a lot of passion put into this project, by all of the city councilors and our mayor, you know, and, you know, city staff. You know, there was a lot of passion put into it and a lot of work put into it. So, you know, I believe, and we're putting a lot of work into it. MET's putting a lot of work into it. Other people have. And it's just to continue to put this work together and work as a community to get better. And there is a light at the end of the tunnel that's a real light that's going to create change to help get our parks back, get our commercial areas back for businesses, get our people that are living in this homeless situation, get them to a place that they need to get the help they need. And some of them they're not all drug and alcohol addicts. I mean, there's a lot of people out there living in parks and places that just need a place to stay to save some money on their job, or they need a place to stay until they get a job. And so, you know, I guess it's the biggest thing I want to say is just support this project. It's what we have, and, you know, let's all make it work.
I don't know if you have an answer for this question, and it's something that we've alluded to before, but needs to be pointed out again, that the bad apples are the ones that are creating the headlines, but they may be the minority of what we see in these camps right now, because there are people there who just have no other choice.
Yeah, I see it that way, Chuck, because several years ago I wrote that it looked like drug and alcohol especially drug dealers would cloak themselves in homelessness. And so they would get involved with homelessness just to take advantage of that and prey upon the people in those situations. And I believe there are people in there like that. And, but there are also a lot of good people in there. The last couple of weeks, we've had so many volunteers from the camps just wanting to get involved with Parker's Place. It's been inspirational to
watch. You've got volunteers from the homeless camps coming down to help?
Absolutely.
Wow.
They're helping like scrape. They're helping clean at Parker's Place Village behind it. They've cleaned fence rows out. They're cleaning old fence out. You know, they're just asking what they can do. And I feel sad that I don't have enough time to tell them what all they can do to make this better. But we hope that when we get into that facility, that we'll start having more and more avenues for people to go out into the community and help. In Roseburg, what we do is we have a lot, probably we've had 17 volunteers that would help the city clean up the illegal camps. You know, so you can kind of redirect people and their energies. And that's kind of what our Parker's Place Village wants to do, is redirect the energies into good things for the community, where in the past people have seen mostly bad things.
All right. Bernie, I want to thank you very much for your time today. And once again, we'll keep watching. And if you need anything, by all means, give us a call. And we have a loud voice here.
All right. Thank you, Chuck.
All right. That's Bernie Woodward, the operations manager for Parker's Place Village, coming up. Once again, I want to remind you, coming up April 15th, lots of interviews with all of the candidates coming up on your May ballot. We'll have all of those done prior to the ballots coming up. And let's see, one further note, next Tuesday, we expect City Council to be right here, or at least representatives of Grants Pass City Council on the Tuesday talk show. I'm Chuck Benson. Good morning, everyone.
We've